Welcome back to an all-new episode of Dirtcast. I am your co-host, Megan Reynolds.
And I am the other co-host, Madeline Davies.
On this week's episode, we are going to be taking a look back on some of our favorite episodes of the past year. We'll be chatting a little bit about the year in celebrity. And also, I would like to remind each and every one of you that we have something very exciting coming up in January. It is a live show. It is Dirtcast Live. It will be at the Brooklyn Podcast Festival. It's at the Bell House on January 13th at 7 p.m. Tickets are $10.
I was thinking the other day, that's like what a latte basically costs in New York now.
Wow. That's true.
With tip.
Okay. For the price of one slightly overpriced
latte. I'm saying, if you got like a latte and then like a muffin.
Yeah, so the price of a latte and a muffin, the price of your like panic breakfast on your way to a big job interview,
yeah.
You could sit at the Bell House amongst peers and friends and watch Maddie and I do what we're doing in the studio, but
at you.
One of us will be wearing a lot of makeup. That's me.
Oh, yeah.
Both of us will be wearing something fancy, I assume.
I mean, I would hope.
We will have special guests. They have not been announced yet.
Keeping them in our hat.
We are. It's going to be really fun. I, for one, am nauseous with excitement and nerves.
Sure. I mean, I just am excited for you all to have an opportunity to take in some real culture. I'll also be wearing a monocle, just, you know, and it might pop out when I get surprised about something.
Maddie and I are actually going to choreograph an interpretive dance to a song from the Star Is Born soundtrack. We tested that at a wedding
Don't make promises that we're not going to keep.
The first time I've told her of this plan, and we'll discuss it offline.
Oh, boy.
anyway, Maddie.
Megan.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah?
I kind of went on like a pretty sad internet spiral last night.
Oh, which boy. Is,
I started looking at Pet Finder.
Oh.
Because I've got it in my head that like a dog will save me.
You guys don't need it. Okay.
Why don't I need a dog?
Do you think the cats would like a dog?
They need something to ride
That's
around.
True. That's true. I've been saying that for years now.
But a part of me is just like, oh, that would be nice. And then I, like, picked three and then realized when the gummy wore off that
when I was no longer
that I am actually more prepared for zero. So now every dog I see on the street, I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Cool.
I mean, it just, like, means none of us should have the internet after 10 p.m. I think nothing good happens.
I agree 100%.
How are you?
I am fine. I spent my morning watching part of the Pentatonix Christmas special that aired.
Yikes.
Yeah. Trying to make a little blog about it. It's called Pentatonix Not So Silent Night. a threat if I ever fucking heard one.
Yeah. It sounds like the name of a horror movie.
Yeah, I know. The premise essentially is a horror movie. The premise seems to be they're in Vegas. And they're, like, recounting. They, like, can't remember what happened the night before because they're so crazy, hopped up on fucking, like, five-part harmony or whatever. So it's, like, they're sitting in a suite at Caesar's Palace, and they're, like, going over, like, why are you dressed like a gondolier? Like, why are you wearing, like, a Roman gladiator costume? And then there's, like, you go back. Kelly Clarkson's there. The Backstreet Boys are there. I believe Maren Morris is there, but I haven't gotten to that part yet. It's not great.
Also, it's, like, Nick Carter was, like, accused of sexually assaulting someone this year, and everyone just forgot
also
that.
Also true, yeah.
Here I like that. I like that Maren Morris, though.
Yeah, me too. I wish she hadn't sullied her personal brand by appearing on a Pentatonix Christmas special.
You know, we all have done things, made podcasts,
yeah.
You know.
We have.
As we look back at this year.
I love to look back. I love to look back at it.
I just want to, how are you feeling about 2018?
Oh, my goodness.
As a whole.
Oy. 2018, again, we've been doing a lot of year-end stuff at Jezebel, and I have been tasked with, like, thinking of things that happened in 2018.
Yeah.
Truly, the only thing I can really remember is Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande, which means that my brain is now irreparably broken in a way that I hope can be fixed, but I don't know if it can.
Yeah.
What about you?
One of my biggest pet peeves is when people are like, I can't wait for this hell year to be over.
Mm.
Because, like, terrible things like no calendar.
That's true. They operate, like, in a timeless, like, sphere.
And I feel like people have been saying this since, like, 2015.
Totally.
And then it's, like, every year has gotten progressively worse.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. 2019 is, like, when the primaries are going to start heating up.
Me.
Like,
God.
Nothing about this next year is going to be cute. Nothing about it's going to be cute.
I mean, life is essentially death by a thousand paper cuts, right?
I mean, here's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Grab your loved ones.
Grab them.
Give them a squeeze.
Yeah.
Find, like, those few things that can make you happy and let yourself feel happy about it.
That's true.
Don't let yourself feel guilty about being happy about it. Just let yourself, like, enjoy something for a little while.
Yeah. Do whatever you can to
get a dog.
Okay. Great advice. Everyone who doesn't have a dog who is listening, go get one.
I'm actually, please don't do that.
Don't.
The shelter system would be so mad at me.
They would be overwhelmed. Maddie's right, though. Don't get mired in, like, the poop because it's so easy. There's so much of it. But if there's some things that make you happy, I don't know, man, do it.
Yeah. Be it Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
If she's the only thing that makes you happy. Do you feel burned by the fact that I won that bet about Pete and Ariana, or do you feel like it was the right thing for them to end their engagement?
Well, I knew that you would win because I feel like every bet that I've ever made, I have lost.
Yeah, that's probably why you didn't want to bet me $200.
I did not. That's certainly why I did not want to bet you $200. I think that their love is a generous word to use for the union between them, but I think we could call it, like, her digmatization.
Oh, yeah. She was digmatized.
She was definitely digmatized. Looking back at it now, I can see, like, all the the signs. She was digmatized. It's okay. It happens to the best of us. It would have, like, crashed at some point, so it's best that it did when it did. And it gave us Thank You Next.
Yeah.
It's, like, it never happened.
This was kind of a wild year as far as, like, Hollywood and celebrities go because— as we've talked about, so much has happened that it's hard to even remember what happened.
Yeah.
But, like, the Weinstein thing was October of last year.
And
okay. And then kind of throughout, I would say, the first several months of 2018, uh-huh. like, the Me Too movement, like, really commanded the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, even that feels like kind of a distant memory. Like, I feel like all of these people who are like, how are these men's careers ever be saved, as if that matters.
Mm.
All of these people could just, like, have a comeback now because it feels like it was such a million years ago.
That's true.
That I think people are like, you know, he served his time.
Yeah, enough time has passed.
He stayed at his, you know, Beaver Creek home for a few months and really thought about things.
I mean, Louis C.K. is already, like, making his comeback. Aziz Ansari, I think, is going on tour.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, we talked about, like, a breakup.
Yeah.
But there was also the nuptials of the century, not talking about Harry and Meghan.
No.
Even though that was this year, too.
That was. Fuck. Oh, my God. Or Priyanka and Nick.
Or Priyanka and
Nick. Which is also this year.
I'm talking about Justin Bieber and Hailey Baldwin.
They got married. They're still married.
Yeah. She's now Hailey Bieber.
She's Hailey Bieber. Congrats to them. And congrats to Nick and Priyanka.
Yeah. And to Harry and Meghan.
And to Harry and Meghan.
That's crazy. There was a royal wedding this year. What about things to look forward to in 2019?
Oh, my God. Let's see.
Or to dread. I don't know.
I'm curious to see. I'm never really curious about the fucking awards season.
I was going
to
say awards
bullshit.
Season.
But I am curious to see if they're going to let the Oscars go on without a host because of all the Kevin Hart stuff.
Kevin Hart, yeah, was chosen as the Oscars host and then quickly stepped down after people pointed out that he is kind of a homophobe.
Yeah, just a little bit.
The whole thing was kind of a whirlwind.
It happened so quickly because it was like, no one wants to host the Oscars. Kevin Hart wants to host the Oscars. Oh, my God, Kevin Hart tweeted all these things that are, like, rude about gay people. Okay, now Kevin Hart's not doing it.
Yep.
And then now it's like, I think now they're saying, like, maybe they don't need a host. And I think they probably don't. Like, it could be a mic stand covered in a sheet. And that would be cute.
Get a ghost. I posed this. I saw The Favorite last week.
I really want to see that.
It's so good.
Ugh.
But Olivia Colman
fucking love her.
Yeah, she's incredible in everything. But she plays Queen Anne, and she's kind of this, like, insane, like, hypochondriac. She's very needy. Mm-hmm. She owns 17 rabbits.
Me too.
And I was just like, I want her to host just as Queen Anne. I want, like, a character to host it.
It should just be Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
Mm, as Allie
as
Jackson.
Allie and Jackson.
See, I would take it.
Maya Rudolph could do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I guess award season is something I'm thinking about for 2019.
How much living coral we'll see on the red carpet?
Pantone's color of the year.
Yeah.
I hope the red carpet is a coral carpet, a living coral carpet.
That'd actually be fun. Made of real coral.
Oh, God. A giant ecological disaster.
Yeah, you fall down and you just, like, destroy your
entire
whole body.
Your body is cut.
I'm into that. I feel like the red carpet should be, like, a feat of strength. Like, you have to, like, go through a whole obstacle. Oh, that would be so much
fun.
That
would be dope. That would be amazing. I would love that.
Like, Ryan Seacrest already kind of is, like, a Hunger Games-esque
master of ceremonies. That's true.
Like, I want to see, like, Julia Roberts having to, like, crawl through, like, a mud...
Yeah, or you have, like, those strings and you have to, like, go, you have to, like, belly crawl under the strings to, like, make it to, like, Julianna Rancic, who's, like, waiting over there for you.
Right.
That's fun.
That's the reward, is you have to talk to Julianna Rancic.
It's just, like, you got through it. It's, like, another obstacle. Like, she's,
the praying,
like,
mantis that lives inside of her, like, breaks out and tries to eat you.
So maybe a producer for the Oscars will hear this.
Oh, that'd be so much
fun. And take what we've said into consideration, because I think that would really up viewership. Social media would be ablaze.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just consider it.
I honestly am not prepared mentally, emotionally, or physically to, like, fathom what could come next year.
Yeah.
All I can say is it's going to be a wild and crazy ride.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we are about to get into some of our favorite clips from 2018. Please listen along with us. If this is your first time, it's a good little buffet of what we have to offer. If you've been with us for a long time, hey, let's just, like, remember some things. Let's go back into the scrapbook of our lives and our friendship, our auditory friendship.
Yes.
We are going to be off for the holidays. So we're going to go dark for about a month. We will be back with our live episode, which will be the Wednesday following the 13th, and then we'll be back to normal. So please enjoy.
In August, we did an episode where we talked about two big Asian American movies, Crazy Rich Asians and To All the Boys I've Loved Before. We were joined by E. Alex Jung, who is a staff writer at Vulture, friend of the podcast. Those two movies were really important to me. I mean, Crazy Rich Asians especially, I saw it twice in theaters, which is something that I would never normally do.
I did as well. I cried both times.
I mean, they were both just, those are two bright things that happened this year that I've forgotten about. But they were both really good movies, really good for representation and all that stuff.
I just watched Searching, which is that John
Cho
movie.
Oh, I want to see that. I heard it was good.
And then Killing Eve, too. It's like sad when you have to, like, pinpoint these few things that happen and be like, it was a good year.
Right.
But, like, comparably, it was a good year.
To the rest, to, like, all of the years that have preceded. Yeah. I mean, it's silly to be like, five movies or TV shows happened that featured, like, predominantly Asian cast. This is, like, the beginning of a wave, because this is how it should always be. But I'm hoping that it is the beginning of something.
So here are some excerpts from our conversation with E. Alex Jung.
Part of the reason for me why I enjoyed Crazy Rich Asians so much is because it is not a hard scrabble immigrant, like, sewing gold into, like, the lining of your jacket and, like, running with your baby daughter in a basket kind of shit, which is, like, I mean, the Joy Luck Club is great. It's melodramatic in
and
a way.
And is a story that should have been told.
100%.
There are many more like it. That
so many people right, have sewed things into linings of coats and ran.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't wait to see more of them, I guess. But
I think it kind of plays into the whole idea of white people being comfortable seeing non-white people in subservient positions or right. in positions of suffering, because mm-hmm. that's like a way that they can empathize in a weird way.
Yeah.
But also it like doesn't question any power dynamics.
Right.
Right.
I mean, this was something that I felt about the first couple of seasons of Fresh Off the Boat. Is that, like, I don't think it's nice in the beginning to see, like, little nods to that, like, maybe white people wouldn't get, like, either if it's in, like, the set or, like, slipping in and out of Mandarin, like, whatever. Like, that's nice. But then you don't necessarily need to center that. Like, I'm Asian. Like, that does not have to be the centerpiece. You don't have to build everything around that.
Sure.
Like, I don't think right. every film that happens to feature, like, I mean, for To All the Boys I Loved Before,
right.
she's supposed to be biraciial, right?
Yes.
Because the dad is fucking Aiden. Jesus Christ.
She did not come from Aiden.
No. John Corbett.
Oh, sorry.
Who plays Aiden on Sex and the City, also is cast as the dad in this Netflix rom-com. It's surprising. Not in a good way, necessarily.
It's jarring when you figure it out. I felt very fucked up about it.
Yeah, I don't know.
If Aiden was in the trailer, I didn't notice it because Lana Condor is so good.
She's great.
Also, she's amazing.
She's so adorable.
She's not getting enough credit.
I don't think so either.
For how good she is.
My letters are my most secret possessions. I write them when I have a crush so intense, I don't know what else to do.
Lara Jean's, like, Asian identity was not at the forefront of that film.
No.
And that was nice.
It's interesting to me because...
Weird that... do you think it's weird that it wasn't?
Well, a couple of things were interesting to me. One thing was that in the books, they call themselves the Song Girls.
Oh, right.
After their mom's last name.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is something that they just kind of, like... like.
Oh, that wasn't in the...
That's not in the movie.
Right.
But... I don't know. Like, I think this is sort of where you see how important casting is, because I do kind of think, and from what I understand, even in Jenny Han, the author of the book, was shopping the book around or optioning the book around to become a film, you know, like, a lot of people wanted to make it a white character. And I think you could have, right? I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then she just would have been like a She's All That type character.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But I don't know. There was something to me that did strike me as like an Asian American feeling that I sort of projected onto it of feeling invisible, feeling kind of second best.
Actually,
and like sort of in the background of things. And even though you're like hot and cute and you wear like nice shoes.
Right. Yeah. But sort of like thinking that you are just like getting through it, just being like, no one's looking at me.
Right.
Because
right.
when her friend calls her out for like being invisible, but actually being a bitch or whatever she says in the bathroom. Oh. It was something like that. She's like, you think no one's looking at you, but like, actually you're a bitch or something rude. I don't remember the exact phrasing. But yes, you're right. There is sort of like an Asian American feeling.
Which you can sort of, you know, like with a white character, that would have just been like feeling like an outsider.
Yeah, like introvert me.
Right. But like, you know, by casting and having like an Asian American lead, it sort of adds another layer unexpectedly.
It's that like you can, built into like a stereotype that is, you know.
Yeah. It's like part of the world, right? It's like part of a feeling in the world. And that sort of taps into that. And so that's kind of interesting to me, right? To think
sort
about
of
like
model minority bullshit.
How casting sort of maybe like creates a narrative inevitably, even though the text itself might not lend it
to
that, you know.
Earlier this fall, we also revisited with two of our faves, Jay Hunt and Robert Ackerman, to talk about one of our weirdly favorite topics, which is strange considering how much his work tends to drive me crazy.
Yeah.
But we talked about all things Ryan Murphy, the complicated and problematic yet trying to be woke.
I videotaped this because it was on my TV on New York One, I think. They were doing like an expose on him, and he said that he wants to bring Pose to Broadway as a musical.
Oh.
But he knows that he's not the person to do it because he doesn't want to tell the story, but he wants to make it happen.
So he's learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're watching him learn in real time.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
That's
like,
weird.
Like on one hand, he's my daddy. Yeah. And then like on the other hand, he's my son.
He's kind of an auteur at this point.
He's definitely an auteur. I mean, once his shit hits Netflix, he's going to be like, that is like auteurhood.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of his stuff is on Netflix already. Do you mean like...
Oh, I mean like his, like the original...
Oh,
he's
his
got
original
a deal.
Movies.
He's got like a whole like 3 or 4 year deal with Netflix to just do content for them.
Damn.
Like only, not on FX anymore.
Yeah, I mean, in one way that's exciting because he's definitely going to cast Judith Light in something incredible.
I hope
he's
so.
He's going to cast Angela Bassett in something incredible.
Yeah.
And so it's like... As we talked about in the podcast, like the Ryan Murphy players mm-hmm. are all, for the most part, like very talented actors who oftentimes are overlooked.
That's true.
He's like Quentin Tarantino, like, you know how he was like known for reviving careers?
Yeah.
He's like that, but with people who like deserve it.
That's true. That was a really fun talk. I enjoyed. I always enjoy talking to Jay and Robert.
So one thing I want to talk about before we get into Versace. Is I would like to talk kind of something that we were touching on about like how Ryan Murphy, I don't know, he kind of seems like this like sort of like shitty diva. He seems like one of those people who just sort of like exploits his cast a little bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And yet I feel like I have to take that back because I think that he has like fostered like the greatest female
yeah.
casts.
We like to call them the Ryan Murphy players. The like people who show up in every show.
Oh, that's really
show.
Nice.
But,
I love that.
But it's true. Like, he seems a little bit, like, just, like, a little sleazy.
Yeah.
But then he, like, Sarah Paulson was just, like, doing indies.
Yeah,
and now
true.
She has, like, 100 awards and is, like, she was in Ocean's 8.
Yeah.
And, like, everything is coming up Sarah Paulson. And he, like, brought Jessica Lange back from, like relative obscurity.
Right.
And he convinces these people to do, like, TV projects,
yeah.
which is pretty impressive on its own.
And he,
own.
Like, got Kathy Bates
like back
like, yeah.
around. That's
Julia
true.
Roberts.
Look at that. That's just a little universe.
It's going to
yeah,
be
it's the
like,
Ryan Murphy players.
Like 7 degrees
<It's>
of, what is it? 6 degrees? Seven
degrees of
Kevin
Bacon.
Bacon. It's now going to be Ryan Murphy.
Yeah,
that's true.
Except for it's like insular and you can never get
yeah.
in.
It's like everyone is 1 degree of Ryan Murphy and everyone
and
else is 100.
You can't get in, but you also cannot get out.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're that's in true. A, you sign something
I
in
believe
blood.
Sarah Paulson signed like a blood oath.
100%.
That she's like there
indefinitely,
for
her
the
life.
Rest of her life.
Well, then you look at the people that are no longer in Ryan Murphy things and they're nowhere.
Another lifelong dream I accomplished this summer, and I say lifelong, and I mean since I started the podcast, I have wanted to do an episode on the crazy-ass show known as Kid Nation, in which a group of children were thrown into the desert, into, like, a Western movie set, and told that they had to make a functioning society.
So fucked up.
There was a lot of, like, extreme characters that came out of it. There was a little girl named Taylor who was into beauty pageants, and her catchphrase was, "Deal with it!" and we happened to get two of...
Like icons.
We had Mike Klinge, who was kind of this very type A wannabe leader at the time. And then we also had Michael Tote, who was sort of the cool kid who, like, even adults watching the show were like, he seems really cool. He's from Portland, Oregon, and had, like, shaggy hair.
He was cool.
And it was a really, really, really fun combo.
It was a blast.
You bring up personality, and I feel like both of you filled really particular roles in that, you know, Mike, you were sort of like the, I don't know, dare I say, sort of nerdy,
yeah,
like, rule keeper.
Yeah. It's okay. You can lay into me.
No, I mean that from, like, a sweet, like, I don't know. I think it's, like,
I took running the town very seriously.
Which yeah,
is
exactly.
Great. Which is great.
Very seriously.
No, I mean, and you, like, really threw yourself into town council, and I think history will remember you as the bold leader that you were trying to be.
I guess this is such a silly feather to put in my cap, but, you know, the first episode is titled, "I'm Trying to Be a Leader Here," which, of course, was me.
You know, I'm tired, too, but I'm here making an effort to try and make this work. I'm trying to be a leader here, and it's just really disappointing.
We all want to go to sleep. Yeah, we do. Good night.
Well, you know, it's so funny because I didn't choose to be on the town council from the get-go. I just wanted to be on the show. And then they kind of called me back and were like, oh, and by the way, you're going to be having kind of a special part from the get-go here.
I like how they set you guys up for success, too, by like,
putting us in a helicopter and immediately,
36
right off the bat.
Of us. 36 of us there, and like we can count and figure out there's like four missing, and they're like, I don't remember exactly how it happened now, but there's the whole tease thing they do in reality TV where it's like, and your leaders are arriving right now.
But don't worry, you've got each other. You've also got four leaders. And they were chosen because they represent all of you in age, geography, everything. They're your town council, and I think I hear them coming right now.
And it's, the guy's like literally soar in on like a helicopter. Yeah. Well, we've been on like this dusty fucking bus ride for like an hour.
Yeah, that was, and for us, it's like, you know, we definitely had our reservations too, where they put us in the helicopter and we're like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then we kind of, as soon as we get off of it and start talking to the other 36 kids, we realize that like, oh man, these guys have just been on this bus for like, God, 6 hours, 8 hours on a school bus. And oh, I can see now. I can see what they did to us. Okay.
It's such a bummer because you were like so stoked with your hat and you're like ready to lead.
I'm feeling like really stressed and really worried. It's just been really tough. I guess I'm just going to have to keep pushing.
Yeah.
Get dropped off in a helicopter and they just like swat you down real quick.
Everybody was like, okay, these assholes.
It's funny because they're like, oh, let's let kids start a society because they're like have all this naivety and innocence. But let's also make sure that the leaders show up like in aristocratic like carriage of some sort.
Yeah, let's immediately institute some social division there.
I think they were both about 14 when we talked about what it means to be a 14-year-old reality star. But it was really interesting to see how they both kind of looked back really affectionately on the experience.
Right.
Neither of them viewed it as damaging to themselves at all. Neither of them really get recognized anymore, which is kind of ideal, I guess.
I would say so.
You know, it's like they put them on screen at their most awkward, and then they got to, like, grow up out of that.
A blessing, really, I would say.
It was a cute talk.
Sometimes it sucked, but it was really, really fascinating all the time. So I'm glad we did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess to piggyback off that, the thing that I would say is that I do think, you know, especially like over the past week and just the past couple of years, I do think there's kind of a touching idea at the heart of Kid Nation, which is just that, you know, there's an aspect to younger people that is sometimes refreshing. I think you saw it in like the Parkland children most recently. They're not really children. They're absolutely adults in how they conduct themselves. And
yeah, you know, more than a lot of people.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so when you look at this past week and you think about, you know, the spoiled assholes who may or may not become Supreme Court justices and throw tantrums in the middle of the floor, you can remember that, like, you know, there's a point in time where, like, there's some 11-year-olds out in a New Mexico desert that managed to handle themselves a little bit better under scrutiny as well. And I think that's important to remember.
We're both, like, weeping.
Yeah, we're both, like, clutching our hearts.
This is what he does, man. This is how he does it. You see,
that was really nice.
Thank you.
Still doing
it. It's been such a long fucking week. This episode was one of my favorites because of the subject and because of the company. June was the 20th anniversary of a show that has impacted my life, the lives of many. Sex and the City, it's a show that we talk about in Dirty as Dirt quite often. It's a show that I reference maybe once a week. We dedicated an entire episode to the four gals, Carrie, Samantha, Miranda, and Charlotte. And we created a foursome here with Joanna Rothkopf and Bobby Finger. I was going to try to say who is the Carrie, Samantha, Miranda, and Charlotte of the four of us, but I like can't do that.
I'm the bus.
Okay.
I'm a Maragda.
A Maragda.
Ugh, I'm a Miranda, probably with like a dash of Carrie, which makes me want to die.
I think everybody has like a dash of Carrie.
I really don't want to talk about it. It's very upsetting.
Yeah, a dash of Carrie.
I'm the Stanford.
We had a great talk with them, as we always do. I believe it was also during this episode where we got to hear the full breadth of Maddie's Sex and the City impressions.
Dirty as dirt? More like dirty bastard.
It's good.
Miranda! Oh, Scoobs, the ghost! I'm Steve.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
How could you have sex with that person?
Good. Oh, he's so cute.
Not a bad Steve.
I think, oh, where's the baby? Where's the baby, Miranda? Can't take care of the baby.
All I can do.
We had a great talk.
Let's have a baby.
I'm triggered now.
Let's have a baby.
Yep, still triggered. Thank you. Just take it. You know what? Just take a listen.
Aiden sucks.
I hate Aiden with the fire of a thousand suns. I'm getting so angry right now. He's just like disgusting with his dumb little string necklace and his unbuttoned chambray shirts. And just like anybody who's like, I'm Team Aiden, I'm just like, get out of my face. Get out. Like, if that's the type of person that you are into, I have no interest in hearing more.
It never made sense that anyone would think that they would make sense. So
one
it's like
Care Bear, ba boo, boo, boo.
Yeah. And it's like, do you
Bobby,
know?
Bobby, boo, boo.
And she cheats on him like 800 times.
She does.
It's also annoying of Carrie to like pretend that she's into him. It's like that friend being like, oh, I'm dating a woodworker now. And you're like, you don't like wood.
Like, you've
never
Donald
looked
Trump.
At wood in your life.
Like, you don't give a shit about furniture.
You just
like, get
Donald
out of
Trump.
Here. Right.
And it's like, stop pretending like this is a life you can have.
Mm-hmm.
She hates him.
She hates everything about him.
She does.
Every single thing about him bothers her. And then it's like, why do I care that he's upset when she cheats on him? And why do I care that, like, the relationship didn't last?
I recently watched the episode where she goes to his furniture store for the first time, and his dog, Pete, a victim in all of this.
True.
Mm-hmm. He, like, throws the dog. Like, the dog, like, comes running up, and it's just, like, supposed to show, like, how woodsy and wild he is.
Right.
But he's like, come here, Pete. Come here, Pete. And he picks the dog up and then just rockets him across
off stage.
The floor.
Like. Yeah, I can picture him rocketing Pete.
Hey, Pete, there you go.
Like, again, I understand why, given the options, people would like Steve.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do not.
I get to make the three-point shot. The half-court shot.
You know how at halftime at the Knicks game, and they pick somebody to try to make a half-court shot for $1 million prize?
Kinda, but go ahead.
Well, next Tuesday, it's fucking me.
She's just like, you're not gonna get it.
Yeah, he's nice.
Yeah, but he's dumb.
He's really dumb.
He's
I also don't like his smart privilege.
Yeah, that's right.
Men can be dumb.
I know.
Okay. I work for Jezebel. Like, is there like one person that you would be like, oh yeah, I would date that guy in 1 second? I have one.
Okay.
Well, I have many. But sure. John Sterling, the politician.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, he would let him pee on you.
Over and over again. Many times.
Repeatedly.
Yeah. I would have like a secret affair with, because he'd be like, we would only be able to like meet while he's in a mask and like go to like some weird place like in Westchester for dinner. Yeah. But
you'd have to go to Westchester.
Yeah,
Chili's.
Fine. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
I'm fine. I think he's my one.
Who
I'm
else?
Trying to think.
Never Aiden.
No.
Never Aiden.
In my mind, I feel like part of me feels like I could make burger work.
I could. Same. I think I could make burger
like I could make
work.
It work.
But I think
would,
that's
like,
because
in,
we all know a burger.
Yeah. I would give it
an honest try, and then I'd be like, I couldn't make burger work. I'd go to work, and I'd be like, guys, I couldn't make burger work.
I was a long time, and this is so embarrassing in retrospect, but I was like a burger defender for a long
same.
Time.
Same. I love burger.
But I think it's just because I loved Ron Livingston so much.
Yeah.
I love his beard. I love that he's like a funny writer.
He's cute.
And it's very funny, like, after working in media and writing for, like, so many years, I'm just like, oh God, I know so many burgers and I hate him.
Yeah, I agree.
He's cute.
But I definitely would like, I would probably date him, and then he would be like the one that all my friends were like, oh, I can't believe, like, I remember when you dated that guy.
Right, you would date him. We would all date him. And then you would break up and you'd be like, blah, blah. And then you'd get into Jezebel Slack and everyone would be like, oh, burger, that fucking guy
sucks. We all dated burger.
Yeah. And everyone would hate him.
Okay, so 2018, as we've already covered, bunch of shit happened that we don't remember. Here's something that happened that I certainly didn't remember until just now. Samantha Bee called Ivanka Trump a feckless cunt.
Let me just say, one mother to another, do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless cunt. He listens to you.
Yeah, that was such a big deal.
Right? It was a huge deal for like at least, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
It's funny because she is a feckless cunt.
Yeah. But another woman calling a woman a feckless cunt on television really, really ruffled some feathers. We had Joe Livingston of The New Republic, who's very smart, to talk to us about the history of the word cunt, why it's good, why it's bad, why it's way more okay in England than it is here.
They actually, like, legit studied linguistics at Oxford.
Yeah.
So they're very smart.
Very smart.
Talking to two dum-dums.
Yeah.
Joe's accent is so lulling.
The accent is nice, and
also—
All
I ever want is to be, like, called a cunt by them.
Yeah.
Cunt.
Thank you.
Yeah, but it sounds a lot better when you say it.
Thank you. I love to say it.
So Maddie and I will not do justice to what Joe said on the podcast, so why don't you listen to them do it instead?
I mean, when you talk about linguistics, you talk about it from, like, a very educated background.
I didn't. I mean, yeah, I have some. I used to be an academic and I've got some academic background in it. But also, I'm just from London, where just like every other word, you know, like, oh, good morning, cunt. You know, just like everyone's just constantly calling each other cunt in the most affectionate possible way.
I love that.
It's a very different usage. Of course, it's gendered in a sense, but it's not something that you would say in anger to a woman.
Right.
You know, as an insult. You wouldn't hurl it as an insult.
You might, but that is not its predominant usage, right?
Right.
And I kind of tried to get my head around this in the article. There's no real simple explanation as to why things are different here than they are in the UK. Mm-hmm. It's just a case of like usage developing over time.
Right.
There's no secret to it, but it is quite funny as like a British person to be here, especially with other Brits sometimes in a bar, just to like say the word cunt really loudly and people get a bit like a bit fidgety, a bit like twitchy in the eye.
Kind of like uncomfortable, but they're not sure if they should say anything or
exactly,
not.
Exactly.
But they're just like
because then they're like, oh, am I going to be offensive to the British people by, like, being offended by the word cunt? It's a really funny, like, dance. It's really good.
That sounds...
And you're like, yes. You say it.
That sounds like a fun party trick.
Yeah, it's good.
I like that.
Well, this article that you're mentioning that you wrote for the TNR.
Right.
Okay. That's
enough. It's kind of like what basically in, like, response to Samantha Bee calling Ivanka Trump a feckless cunt, because she is a feckless cunt.
Absolutely.
And sort of like how it goes back to Middle English, basically, where it had kind of like a beautiful meaning.
Yeah. I was really struck by people, you know, and obviously these people on the right instrumentalizing this news story in order to gain leverage and then do with
create,
that leverage what, you know, their satanic will. But I was really struck by those people on the right calling it a slur.
Yeah.
Which, like,
that's interesting.
It's really not. You know, like, a slur is a word that has been removed from our vocabulary, you know, like, forcibly, and norms have been created to prevent people saying it because it, like, enacts harm upon a vulnerable population, right?
It's oppressive.
Exactly.
It's a weaponized word.
Right, exactly. Like, cunt has never been used to, you know, like, literally control women in society. It's
right,
like,
we have other mechanisms for that.
There are other...
Yeah, so exactly. Many other ways.
We had laws for that. Yeah. We have gender.
We don't need
the
words.
Word cunt. Exactly. Absolutely, like, it's void, it's empty. It's just an exploitation of, like, the mechanisms that drive a news story now. And affect change, right? Like, this is actually how it works these days. Yeah. This is how people get fired. This is how people lose their jobs, like, and get cancelled for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's soulless, it's depressing. And I think that's why, it's why I wanted to write about it, is that it takes this really, like, rich and evocative word, which, you know, beloved by cunts and those who love cunts, and it carries so much kind of intangible culture and interesting politics inside it. And then to exploit some completely fake sense of its meaning for such hollow purposes.
So it's cynical.
But it's like specifically depressing in this instance because of the very richness and like also the kind of like nihilistic joy of the word cunt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's a kind of inverting its nihilism into something like just fucking boring.
God, that's so right. How dare they make Coach boring?
How dare they?
I'm alone in my house. I'm out on the town. I'm at the bottom of a barrel. Wow, is Lady Gaga in here?
Oh my God. Stephanie, is that you? Okay, she left.
Look what I found. Bye.
This 2018 wrap-up would not be complete without talking about...
The movie of the year.
The movie of the year.
The breakout pop star of the year, Allie.
Allie, spelled ally. The Star is Born really consumed a large part of the fall for me. I was telling Maddie earlier that I have gotten back into the soundtrack, and I don't know why. I don't know what is wrong with me.
Because it's a good soundtrack.
I've been listening to Why Did You Do That?
Why did you do that?
And Hair Body Face. I got really stoned and made dinner on Sunday and listened to both of those like on my headphones because my roommate was watching TV. And had he come into the living room, he would have witnessed like a very embarrassing like choreographed routine that like centered the cat. It's cool. He didn't. I'm fine.
I originally saw it in theaters with a friend, and then because we're Writers Guild, we got the screener.
Yeah.
Bragsies.
Okay.
So we watched it at home, and afterwards, my boyfriend was singing along to Why Did You Do That?
Mm-hmm.
But he said the lyric says, "Why did you text me my boyfriend's info?" is the lyrics he made.
What? He did.
And it truly destroys me thinking about it. Why did you text me my boyfriend's info?
We had Lindsay Weber, friend of the podcast.
Yes, host of Who Weekly.
Yeah. She came on to talk to us about so many things about this stupid movie that I love. Did not cry the first time. Sobbed like a baby the second time. Again.
Oh, I cried both times.
I don't know what's wrong with
me. Something about growing into my 30s, I have become like a real crier.
A crier, yeah.
I cry all the time. And I like, it's kinda, okay. And I like it.
It's nice.
I love the feeling of just like purging liquid from my body.
I love to cry. But we did not cry during our conversation with Lindsay.
No, we laughed a lot.
We laughed a lot. There's a lot of riotous laughter.
You know, sometimes it's a thin line.
It's true. I'm surprised that we didn't laugh so much that we started crying. I've been on that thin line many times in 2018. Mm-hmm. A Star is Born, I think, like, pushed me over. But it was a great conversation. Lindsay's wonderful. One thing that I do remember us talking about was Why Did You Do That? And whether or not it was supposed to be a good pop song or, like, intentionally a bad pop song.
Yes.
And I believe maybe just me and Lindsay came down on the side that it was supposed to be bad.
Because the whole movie, she felt slightly off in a way where she didn't look like Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
She looked like this alt version of a pop star where if Lady Gaga had followed a different sliding doors path, she could have been.
Totally.
You know, like, and Why Did You Do That to Me sounds like a seaside off of Fame Monster, which what, like, which, you know, I would have loved, but I
like
recognize is bad.
Exactly.
But like, that's really subtle. Like,
that is subtle.
That's subtle posturing. And like, I thought that was really brilliant. And that was, I don't know how much it was Bradley Cooper, but it was a lot of the songwriters thinking about what is going to sound like a real song, but sound bad.
Maybe I was just giving Bradley Cooper too much credit.
I think you were,
Let's never
just
do that.
In that, like, there's that really, like, heartbreaking scene where he's drunk and talking to her in the bath, and it's just being
I
so
like that.
Cruel.
That was bad.
And I was just like, I don't know, when he just, like, is, like, insulting how she looks.
Yeah.
Insulting.
Yeah.
I guess my feeling was like, oh, this is someone who's not in the right.
I love that. Like, it could have just been, like, right, he was such an asshole. But there were
elements
of him, like, I tried to mold you into, like, an artist, a real artist. Like, you have real talent. And Why'd You Do That to Me is
not
like,
it.
Up to your talent or whatever. And that song is insane.
That song is insane, and he's right.
Yeah, and then I was shamed.
You were shamed. And then Diane Warren, who wrote the song, was like—
my girl, Diane.
Your best friend, Diane Warren.
She was like, I don't write bad songs.
Yeah, she's like, fuck you, Megan and Lindsay. Maddie, let's get lunch. And that's what happened.
Yes. Then I had lunch with Diane Warren.
And it was amazing.
Moving on. No, I didn't.
We talked about the nature of camp and as it relates to the movie, how the movie is about—really, so much of the movie is about trauma.
Yeah, trauma and addiction.
Right, which a lot of coverage of the movie, I think, glosses over.
And how Bradley Cooper really made his face an alcoholic.
But his bod.
But his bod was like, perfectly sober. Bradley Cooper should have been fatter.
Yeah.
Okay, I said that, and it was a little bit of a problematic statement because someone said to me, and they were—
Oh, God. Okay.
Right, well, it's like, you know, alcoholics can be any size. They can be fit, too. And I said—
That's not why I think you should have been
if
fatter,
you're a
though.
Rock star.
No, that's
and you're
exactly
not,
why I think you should have been fatter.
Well, if you're a rock star and you're not taking care of, you know, like, didn't look like he was working out at the gym, is what I'm saying. Like, that yeah. didn't fit into his narrative. I understand that people who have addiction problems can look however
you can look
they
any,
however.
Any human.
You can look any way. But anyway. You're right. The fact that they kept showing off his very hunky torso
yeah.
in many very obvious ways. Like,
it's like when he gets like the steroid shot,
yeah,
I'm
when
like,
he's like
that's
approaching.
When I saw like his body, like his ass. Yeah,
you're like, oh, like you're hot, I guess.
Yeah.
That was weird. It was like he was wearing an old mask, but then like a hot body.
His face was so confusing.
Yeah.
To me.
I get why people would be like, yeah, like anybody can be
yeah.
an addict.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I do think that if you're an alcoholic for long enough, your body shows it.
Yeah. That's and true. So this was just his face had shown it.
Yeah. It was just like the ruddy, like
the self tanner, the perma squint. The like,
but that's why it's like
his,
okay,
Irish complexion. We'll call
would
it.
Have Clint that's Eastwood. Nice. Would you have believed a Clint Eastwood more? I think I would have. Not that he would have been better,
but
I think
been
he
better,
would have been
more
better
believable.
Casted.
Yeah.
Well, he was originally going to direct this, right?
Yeah, and maybe star in it too.
Yikes!
Yeah.
An older actor could have maybe been more
for
convincing
sure.
in terms of look, but like Bradley
someone
Cooper,
like a little more probity.
Yeah, like a little bit more like.
Grizzled, naturally disheveled,
mm-hmm.
not fake tanner disheveled.
But again, his voice very elderly.
Yeah, his
my
voice
goodness,
had, his voice had seen many things,
as if it had been like in the back of a closet and like dragged out and aired out.
I also am really excited to see Gaga's red carpet looks.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see Gaga's performance at the Oscars.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what they do on the Oscar stage. Bradley Cooper must piss himself.
Yes, definitely. Just as a part of, to honor his own work.
Yeah. Yeah, he must piss Paul himself.
Paul Z has to introduce him, and then he has to piss himself.
Again, they should let us host the Oscars. Just kidding.
Hosting the Oscars? Can
I
you
would
imagine?
No, Maddie, I would die. I would have a nervous breakdown.
The amount of times that we would, like, say something and then be like, I don't know, we're tired.
We would be fired.
Then we'd be like, Rachel, can you edit that out? And then they would be like, Rachel is in here. This is not your dumb podcast.
The big hook that they had on Showtime at the Apollo would come out and drag us off stage. Thank you so much for listening to Dirtcast. This episode was produced by Rachel Withers and was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. Majdanu Mofidi is our executive director of audio. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood. If you want to send us a tip or just let us know what you think, hit us up at dirtcast@jezebel.com. You can find us on Spotify, NPR One, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.